This podcast is brought to you by Workle, a platform helping people get happier at work. Find out more at workle.co. Work happier.
My approach has always been, just give it a shot. What is the worst that could happen? Like, you want to ride the wave, whatever that wave is. If you want to do something, go and do it. Try, fail.
Welcome to the Happy Work Life Podcast, where people with inspiring careers reflect on how happy they have been in their working lives. On this podcast, we hear from a range of people working in business, startups, science, academia, media, healthcare, fashion, and much more, and find out which roles gave them the most satisfaction and, importantly, what they have done to get happier at work. So, sit down with me, Mark Price, founder of Workle, to help you get happier at work. Workle is the platform where you can find a job in the happiest companies, take our happiness test, network, and get career support from experts, and much, much more. On this edition of the Happy Work Life podcast, I'm really pleased to be joined by Jordan Schwarzenberger. Now, many of you will know Jordan. He set up Arcadia Media, which is now a really influential UK media company, and also is really famous for his social phenomena, Sidemen, which many of you will have seen on YouTube. I'm really looking forward to talking to Jordan about his business life and about Gen Z, of which, of course, he is part. Hello, Jordan. Welcome to the podcast. You've done incredible things in setting up your media business and Sidemen and the huge success that that's become. But where I'd like to start is in your early years. Was there anything when you were growing up that led you to think that you would be an entrepreneur and you'd be an entrepreneur in the media space?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, thank you for having me and yeah, excited to chat. I think, going back to when I was at school, I was always interested in sort of setting up little projects and mini sort of businesses and projects. I had a number of things that I did, like I ran a clothing brand for a bit of time called Black Mountain Clothing when I was in sixth form. I had a film magazine called Lost VHS, where we were able to get access to go and do screenings in Soho, which as a 16-year-old was like the maddest thing ever for new films that hadn't come out. I just by emailing some PRs and asking. Did a couple of other things. I had like a music phase where I made like an album. I was like, oh, I want to make an album by when I'm 14, and did put out a mixtape, which I did, and somewhere on the internet, I think. I just did a bunch of different projects. And then before that, I think growing up, you know, I'd always had a home. My parents were very like just encouraging of like creativity and me just doing different things and following different projects and whatever that might be. And I think that's always sort of carried me through as a mindset of just, if you have an idea, just kind of go for it and give it a shot. And what's the worst that could happen? That was always me growing up. That was me at school. And so, yeah, that sort of carried, I think, nicely into the grown-up world when I got out of that, and started in business.
And have you ever thought about what it is that gave you that drive?
I think it's a good question. I think, you know, my parents were super supportive of it. I think maybe my temperament is more impulsive, probably more if you were to map, I don't know if much about the temperaments, but map, you know, I'm definitely a sanguine in that sense, and quite like, not like impulsive, but slightly, you have the kind of the idea or the sort of desire to go do something, you sort of just go and do it, which is a gift and a curse, and can obviously lead a teenager into some sticky situations and whatever else. But yeah, I think that was always my character of like, well, actually, I'm just going to go for it and not overly stress about the potential consequences or, you know, the things that could go wrong. I think I've never had that mindset of fear or anxiety around things going wrong. It's even to this day, it's a case of, we'll give it a go. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but I'm not planning for disaster. And actually, I think as I've gone through business as well, you notice there's different temperaments, different personalities view that bit differently. My approach has always been, just give it a shot. What is the worst that could happen with the vast majority of ideas that I could have? I think that's sort of in my temperament, encouraged by my parents. Then also, I guess, not having, you know, a lot of people grow up in their in environments at home or their environments at school that they hate, or they're kind of surrounded by fear and anxiety and worry. I never had that. I was very fortunate to have a very secure and stable family, and the same at school, good friends, everything. So it was all very secure. And I think that personal security leads to creative security as well, I think. And the two go hand in hand.
In terms of creativity, I mean, were you creative in other senses at school, or did you do other things around leadership? Were you the, I don't know, captain of the football team? Or
Yeah, I mean, I played in a, I had a, I was in the football team for Australia, yeah, in for like what 10 years, Alexandra Park Youth Football Club, which is local to me. So I was a Sunday league team. I was in there for like 10 years with my friends. That also helps a lot, I think, in terms of teamwork and understanding responsibility and digging deep to wake up on a Sunday morning and go play and whatever else. I think like I had, you know, had a good amount of that as well. Yeah, in terms of school, I kind of did quite a few, like just leading. I led on a various different initiatives, as I can't remember now, but various different things that sort of set up societies and little groups. And yeah, always had that sort of leadership drive, just to kind of, again, driven more from the idea of just getting stuff done more than anything else, and just again the principle of giving it a go. So yeah, I did quite a bit of that at school, but yeah, feels like a lifetime ago now, even though it wasn't, I'm only 27, so it wasn't that long ago, but it feels like it now, the amount of stuff that's gone on.
Did you feel differently wired in some way?
I think so. I always had the idea of just getting stuff done and just going for it rather than, yeah, like waiting around. And I think a lot of people who I grew up with and was, you know, was friends with and stuff, there was just a mindset of coast, it was not coasting, but just kind of going through life without really doing too much. And you're sort of told what to do. You crack, you know, you kind of go with the flow of everything rather than taking control a little bit. And so, yeah, that led me to then when I was coming to the end of school and I was looking around at like, well, what on earth should I do? And I just knew I didn't want to go to uni because of that same thing. I don't want to be sat in a lecture hall being told what to write in a way that was detached from actually doing the work and getting it done in the real world. That was always something that was intrinsic to me. And I think a lot of my friends, a lot of people that I know, and a lot of young people generally don't have that same mindset around stuff, and yeah, for a number of different reasons. But thankfully, I was able to see the wood through the trees a little bit.
And then you really started your kind of media career in earnest, didn't you, after school? You just want to talk us through the things you did before you founded Arcade Media.
So I started off when I was in I guess like yeah, it was that inflection point at the end of school where I'm looking at university and thinking, hell no, I do not want to go to this place, whatever that place is. It just wasn't for me. All my friends, obviously everyone around me was going doing their gap years, which is a silly idea, I think, or going and doing whatever useless degree. And I knew that I whatever degree I was going to do would also be useless, but I thought I didn't know what else there was. So I was like, well, okay, I have to do something because that's just what you do. And I remember there was a degree at King's College, which I like the look of, called Digital Culture. And the only reason why I like the look of it is because it seemed like the least degree that I could do. It wasn't, you know, American studies or geography or politics or any of these things that are just totally unapplicable to any real job, really, unless you want to be a, you know, I don't know, in politics or whatever it might be. Even then, it's still not going to be overly applicable. So I think I was just sat there going, you know, I really want to do this, but I don't know what else to do, and I don't know what else is even out there beyond university, which is again a problem that people don't have the visibility on the world of work early enough. But that's another thing. And I think yeah, I just ended up I applied, I got accepted in to King's College to study digital culture or whatever it was. First year of that course, was there literally. I remember showing up first day, I'd be like, this was terrible, I hate it here. And then I just stuck it out. You know, I ended up going to all the lectures and seminars, trying to get stuck in, but just realizing this was a total waste of time, and I could just feel it. And again, that slightly, not impulsive, but that intuition that is something that I'm quite a believer in for myself, is just like when you have that instinct to move or to pivot or to change, you just have to take that instinct. When you know, you know. And I knew then 100% that that was not going to be a good use of my time. So then I ended up well, I guess just before then, sorry. And I guess I had this instinct even earlier, because before I'd even started, I'd reached out to the one company that I looked at and thought, you know what, this is a company that I could work for, and I want to at least learn and see what they do. And that was Vice. And Vice at the time were, you know, were doing really good things. They were sort of leading on YouTube documentaries and killing it, really, in a lot of ways. And I just remember reaching out to them and saying, hey, like, can I please just have a coffee and speak to somebody here? Because this looks like the sort of place that I might want to work one day. And so I did that. And then over the summer, just before uni started, even though I'd been accepted into King's, I was heading there in September, they allowed me to do work experience with them for 6 weeks. And I loved every minute and had the best time, learned so much more in those 6 weeks than I could ever have learned at uni. And I did in the whole term that I survived there. Like I learned so much and absolutely loved it. And so I did that for yeah, 6 weeks, then started King's in September. And then I remember every Friday, during my time at King's, I went back to Vice and worked there for the Friday and did that for a full term. Before, I remember it was the Christmas party, so September to December, and I remember being there, the Vice Christmas party, sit there going, to the creative director and the associate creative director there, who are my two sort of line managers, and then the managing director Ian of the agency, and going, guys, like, I really hate uni, like, it's such a waste of time, I love it here. And they just said out of the blue, they were sort of, they went to me, you know, we'd love to hire you if you were in, if you'd be interested in joining us, but full time, but we don't want your parents to hate us and to come with pitchforks. I just think they'll be okay with it. And I immediately went home after Christmas party, woke up the next day, and then told my parents that I was going to leave, and they were like, yeah, great, go for it. Super supportive, didn't even blink. So I submitted all my stuff, and then I was out, and that was it. And and then I started at Vice full time as, I think, their youngest ever creative. I was 18 at the time, in the January of 2016, and I was there for 3 months before, yeah, the next part of the story. But yeah, I was it was great. And I was such a, I was very privileged to have the main thing, the visibility of what's possible at a company like Vice, and to be able to look at a company and understand it by just being in it enough to say, okay, now I know how to make my steps in the real world. Now I know how to, you know, get things going. Because I understood the structure, the people, what was needed, what the business even was, like, all of that was then super clear. So then after Vice was Labible. So Ian, who was the managing director of the agency at Vice called Virtue, he basically said to me, you know, one day, would I be interested in coming for a walk with him? So I was like, all right, yeah, cool. So went around the corner, and he said, hey, I've been asked to go to Lab Bible to set up their agency. Do you want to come with me? Basically copying Vice, copying Vice's model, but bringing it over to Lad. It was, I think, interesting, because I was like 18, and oh, who's the managing director? Why is he bringing me out around for a chat? But Ian was the person who sort of initially brought me in, and yeah, he said, look, do you want to come with me? And I thought about it for half a second, really, and said, you know what, yeah, I'm down. Because I loved him, he's great, and we're still friends to this day. He's very senior, and I kind of had the instinct of, well, I could almost ride the coattails of somebody incredibly senior going to do a big thing in a new place. How much more will I learn doing that, being closer to someone of a higher caliber than being a junior creative in an agency, right, that's already established? And actually going and starting something is going to teach me so much more. So I hardly even thought about it. I was like, yeah, I'm down. And then we started, I think it was about 2 months after that conversation. I was advised for a total of 3 months. This conversation must have been in the February maybe of that year, 2016. And then I joined after his gardening leave, I think in May or something like that. May or April, maybe. And then yeah, started there as a creative strategist in an agency that was me, him, and one other person, and then called Will, who's also a friend still to this day. And we started what has become now Lab Bible's commercial agency function. Which is now like a proper beast in its own right.
And then you moved on from there to be chief creative officer at the age of 20 at YMU.
Yeah.
Why did you leave Lad Bible? And what was the draw of YMU?
There was a little gap in the middle. I went to start my own agency, actually, because I was sat there going, you know, I'm like 19 now, like, I know it all, you know, I've done all the things there are to do and whatever else. Obviously not, but I'd sort of felt a little bit of that. And sat there going, I want to start my own thing and try, because why not? And so I created my own Gen Z agency called Roundabout, which was the first Gen Z agency, I think, in the country at the time. And the idea of that was, you know, I'm 19. I am the audience that brands and companies are trying to reach. How can I position myself as the Gen Z thought leader, but also as somebody who, as a business that people can come to when they want to reach audiences like me? So I did that for 6 months. And during that time, I met a bunch of companies like James Grant, who I ended up working with, you know, other companies like Boiler Room, MTV, Dugout. So a bunch of really big publishers and entities, and ended up, you know, I think we made like 40 grand or something in the first 4 months of revenue, which was not bad. And had a couple of people who I was working with, who, you know, were getting a little part-time salary on the side of their uni course. And, you know, I was learning what it even meant to manage a company money and whatever else, like, you know, a lot of learnings, tax, all of those things. Become very real. And they, again, you learn those things when you go and do it. You can't learn it from any books, really. So I did that and loved it. But then what the company that I love working with the most was James Grant, who ended up becoming YMU after I joined them. But James Grant were the biggest talent agency for TV talent more than any at the time. And you know, we had a really great time sort of consulting with them as an agency. Myself and the two partners that I had, we did these projects for people like Frank Lampard and Reggie Yates and whoever else. And it was great. It was like, hold on a minute. And I looked at that business and thought, wait, this company is basically a massive publisher. You've got a huge set of audiences here that if you were to pull the social followings of everybody here, you'd have a bigger audience than Lab Bible, but they're not thinking about them as a publisher. They're thinking about them as talent. And if you were to apply publisher thinking, Vice thinking, Lab Bible thinking over to a talent agency, what could you do? How much could you unlock? Which was right, I think. And so we came over there to help lead the charge on that front, because I remember having a conversation with Mary. It always happens before Christmas. I think people get a bit like reflective for the year ahead. And Mary sat there with me and said, yeah, like, you know, we love working with you. We'd love to work with you on a, you know, on a proper level. And we'd love to have you join us if you'd be open to it, shutting down your agency and coming over. So I did, and started there. And it was Jan 1st, 2018 as a new chief creative officer. So I was, 19, 20 at the time, 20, yeah, 20 at the time. And yeah, coming in, you know, with a big role and lots of responsibility, but also in a new role. So I didn't have people under me. I was very much a free agent in that sense, to kind of move around and do what I wanted to do, to add value, which was, again, we can get into that, but a whole heap of new learnings and new challenges, etc. I had about 4 years there and loved it. It was like a lot of fun. But I ended up just getting the itch off during COVID, because I think a lot of people felt similar way, whereby we had a lot of companies just became very strained, not needlessly, but obviously you couldn't do a lot of work and a lot of things were shut down. So everyone became hyper proactive in a way that was a bit, I don't say useless, but it was just inefficient. It was like working loads, but not much, because everyone didn't really know what else to do. So I remember we had like 8 board meetings a month and I was sitting central. So it was just this total waste of time. I just had my first baby with my wife, Millie. And we're just there going, I was just there going like, this is not for me anymore. Like, I don't like this in the same way that I did. So I had just a revelation or a bit of a moment of, you know what, I want to be open to something new. And I didn't know what it was, but I just had that openness for the first time really in those 4 years. I felt like I'd learned a lot, been through, you know, big private equity process and you know, sold the company also, you know, which was an amazing process to be a part of. I was one of 4 people alongside the CEO, head of America, head of M&A, and then me sort of selling the company, which was again like amazing. And all these learnings, I was like, this is a really crazy experience, because it was better than any degree or any master's you could ever do in business, really. So I learned so much from that. But then yeah, just ended up being having that instinct of just, right, if something's there, I'll probably do it, or I'll at least be open to doing it. And so then I ended up, a friend of mine, Aaron, who was in the business management division, he'd left to go and manage some TikTokers just as TikTok had become a thing. And I remember he, I'd say close to him as he sort of started his own business, had some ups, had some downs. He did on a professional level, you know, he's on his own, solo founder, he never managed before. Like, he had some challenges. I sort of stayed close and just helped him from afar. And then he ended up meeting someone called Sam, and Sam has become really, well, he is the YouTuber accountant. He's looked after every big YouTuber in the UK on the accountancy side, from Worthing near Brighton, for the last decade, right? So he knows everybody. And he met Aaron and they've been talking and discussing the gaping opportunity in the space of management, which still exists, around, you know, really adding strategic value to talent in a bigger way than just brand deals. And I think, you know, Wymy were ahead of the curve on that front, building IP with talent, creating brands, like really moving into ownership versus just transactions, and management being that sort of key strategic partner. So Sam has looked after the Sidemen for that whole time as well, and knows them well, but also knew they hadn't had management. They didn't have any structure around them, really. They had no one on their payroll, basically an empty shell of a infrastructure with a huge, incredible audience and 7 very talented creatives. So if you bring some infrastructure and some operations into that and a setup, like what could be done, but also a bit of strategy around, well, what could this become, right? So that's what we did. We sort of set, you know, Aaron met Sam, they, you know, connected with me. We came together as a 3 and said, look, let's speak to them. Let's pitch to them and see if they'd be up for it. And so we did a pitch and put together a strategy for them. And they said, yeah, let's do it. So that was, I think, just before, it was this time actually, because we incorporated Arcade 1st of April, 2021. So 4 years ago, this is our 5th year, going into our 5th year from today, actually. And so we started and went for it. And, you know, we ended up going from what it was at the beginning, which was an empty shell, really, of an infrastructure. It was one person on payroll, no office, nothing, to now 40 people on Sidemen Entertainment's payroll, 4 other businesses, Sides, which is a restaurant chain, XX Vodka, which is a vodka brand, Best Cereal, which is a breakfast brand, Upside, a VC fund, Sidemen Productions, Side Plus, And then, you know, 400% revenue growth, huge amount of kind of moments, charity matches. We've done three now, just did Wembley, Inside, Netflix show, doing season one of the US series as well soon too. So like a whole heap of things, Christmas number one single, beat Mariah Carey at Christmas, which will forever be a big moment, like all this stuff. So we've just done like a whole heap of things because it was all driven by strategy and focus really. And then more than anything else, the Sidemen, who are like, you know, the Lamborghini of Lamborghinis, and who creatively are brilliant, but also more importantly, they just manage themselves very well. So it means you can really work because you're not dealing with their egos and their emotions. More often than not, you're dealing with how can we build this and take it on, and they're up for it. So there's alignment there, which means you can do some really meaningful work rather than being with talent as I have been before at times, right? Where you're dealing with individuals or people who are emotional and more charged by insecurity and vulnerability rather than being charged by reason and ambition. And the Sidemen are way more charged by the latter. So yeah, that's where we're at pretty much today.
Well, I mean, it's an amazing story, Jordan. And I mean, what I love about it is there's no end to your entrepreneurial nature, whether it's breakfast bars or drinks or YouTube or just bringing your insights. And I mean, it just begs the question, where do you think you'll be in 10 years from now?
I have no idea. I mean, I think, to be honest, I can't see the Sidemen ending. They're in a spot now where they, you know, they enjoy seeing each other. They enjoy their own, you know, they enjoy their company. They enjoy, being filming and creating content, becoming producers. Obviously, they've got a Netflix show now, which might open up a whole new world of opportunity. They've just sold out Wembley. Like, they're kind of on top of the world in terms of the trends and what's happening in the industry. They're leading the way, and we get to help them do that, right? So I think for us, it's following them. Like, I have no plans to stop working with them ever, is until they fire us, right? Whenever that might be, if it ever happens, you know, let's see. But that would be like the only time, if they ever said they wanted to change, that'd be the only time I would want to stop working with them, because there's so much to do. And I think we're at the start of an amazing, we're at the bottom of an amazing wave that I think is going, who knows how long it's going to last. No one can see the future, but you can see trends and you can predict the future in terms of the numbers, which don't lie, that, you know, entertainment and media is moving towards creators, is moving towards own distribution, owned audience, independent producers, with audience as the Sidemen are. You know, it's moving towards us and towards them, and that's really exciting. And that's always where I like to be. I like to be on a personal level on whatever's the most exciting thing, and kind of ride the. I've learned as well through the years, with Vice, with Lad, with what, like, you want to ride the wave, whatever that wave is in business, and you always want to be on whatever's happening and what's exciting rather than whatever's on the decline, because obviously things change and industries come and go, opportunities come and go. But I feel like we're actually weirdly at the beginning of, I guess you could call it, creator professionalization, like creators becoming proper businesses. Like, we've sort of led the way, I think, here in Europe. Mr. Beast is doing it in America. We're one here, he's one there. There's no one else really in the world at the top level who is doing what I think we as a collective are doing. And so that's a really exciting place to be. Like, you don't want to ever leave that. And I don't think they will want to leave that. They've got their families, they've got their responsibilities at home, they've got all those things on a personal level, the Sidemen. So, you know, they are in it, right? And they are committed to each other and to the business that's been set up, which is super exciting. And that is like a whole world of unknown, but I enjoy also pioneering a little bit, or trying to be amidst pioneers, right? Then like pushing forward in uncharted waters rather than doing what everyone else has done. What is interesting though is I think the principles are very similar to how other industries and how other businesses have had success. And that's something that I'm really interested in as well. Like, I was a Lad, I was at Vice, I know those models brilliantly. I know how well those companies scaled and grew. Can that be applied to creators? I think it can as well. So that's something that's also on a personal level interesting to me. But yeah, I think 10 years time, who knows? I'll be 37, so still have some gas in the tank in 10 years time.
And with the Sidemen, which has just been a phenomenon, as I've said, what are the real highs and what are the challenges, Jordan?
I think the challenges are making sure the Sidemen don't get dragged into detail that they shouldn't be involved in. I think challenges being doing too many things, and how do you prioritize? Challenge being finding great people always the biggest challenge, but you know, finding the right people to help. Also, probably the biggest challenge I'd say actually is capitalization on some of these business models, which are just awful business models. Like restaurants suck, alcohol sucks. We've chosen the most difficult business models to ever get into as our first two things, alongside Side Plus, which is ironically the best business model because it's all digital, super scalable, super high profit. So you have like the worst and they're the best. And I think, I think capitalization for those projects is really important, mainly on food and, you know, F&B. It's like there's a lot of money that you have to pump to build these brands. And I think finding partners that could have that capital for the long haul, whether it's through franchise partners or through JV partners, like that's really difficult because the reality of these businesses is it takes a long time and a lot of cash to build them into really big entities. So we're on that journey now, and we're looking at different funding opportunities and options. But also the challenges as a creator is your expectation is so much higher amidst buyers, amidst franchisees, amidst the public. So you have a sort of pressure which you have to still spend against. You can't rely on organic to drive that. It has to be driven by investment, as everything else should. So yeah, I mean, loads of learnings. Like, not everything's gone right. Like, things have gone wrong. Things have gone like really well. So there's been a whole mix of things, really, as with every business, which has been a lot of fun to navigate and to learn from, because I feel like now we really understand the models we want to be in. We understand what works, we understand what doesn't, in a way that, you know, we would never have known in 2021. So we have a real deep knowledge, good and bad, I think, which helps us a lot.
And Jordan, you've become the face of Gen Z. You've been to number 10, you've advised, and yep, you've talked, yep, to the government. So what would you say to them about Gen Z? What advice would you give to your generation?
The advice I would give is that, you know, that you need to get skills earlier than you think. And I think, not that it's ever too late, really, but you just need to get started on learning by doing rather than learning by, you know, by being taught necessarily. I think, you know, in this new world of opportunity that is just in abundance, digital businesses are more exciting than they've ever been. Digital product, obviously the advent of AI as well, the speed to market. Obviously this week's been crazy with all of that stuff with ChatGPT's recent update on images and so on. And it's like the opportunity now, I'm watching these kids online and they're building, scaling, you know, 5-6 figure companies in terms of monthly revenue, sorry, on their own from their bedrooms. It's like there's a new generation of people out there who are just going for it and trying. And the other thing as well is there's no shortcut. Like, the only way to win is through trying and failing, trying and failing, trying and failing. And we in this country suck at supporting failure. Like, we're just really bad at it, and we also are not very good at encouraging people to give things a go. And I just think that's the biggest message I would say for Gen Z, is like, if you want to do something, go and do it, try, fail. You will learn more from failing than anything else. It's very cliche, but it's true. And you just have to keep going and keep taking swings. Americans are very good at taking swings. We're not very good at taking swings here. We sort of look down on it, or just get too scared to even try in the first place. But ultimately, you know, the people that succeed the best and do the most, the people that really win, whether it's through building something meaningful, something with impact, something that's financially, you know, excellent, whatever it might be, they just take swings upon swings upon swings rather than, rather than banking on one thing and hoping it works and then just being like, cool, that's it. They just keep going. And I think that's the key. The earlier you start that process, the better outcomes you'll get, without a doubt.
And my last question, Jordan, if you were advising somebody who's kind of thinking of going into media, sort of replicating your steps, what advice would you give them?
So I would say my advice would be to network in the real world, to network online, to just meet people who can educate you about the business itself rather than trying to get paid from people. Like, that's really important. I think, you know, the reality is people, especially in this climate, businesses are unlikely to pay you if you're untried, not tested. Like, and that's a real shame with everything that's going on from a macroeconomic perspective in this country, whereby the strain on business is so big that young people are just not going to get paid for those entry level jobs. Because why would you take a risk on someone when that financial risk is loaded with headaches financially, and, you know, in terms of tax or in terms of national insurance, whatever it might be? It means the younger people are just going to miss out on opportunity. So I think you have to almost work within that structure, and that means trying to find opportunities that you can work, if you can, for free, support yourself on the side. That's another big thing, I think. Like, whatever your dream is in terms of industry, you'll probably need to find your feet for nothing to begin with, realistically, it's just totally, and I'm, it might sound a bit harsh, but it's true. Like, your entry level should really be, I think, these days, if you want to go quickly, is doing it for free, finding some way to support yourself outside of that, getting your foot in the door that way, because it's way easier for a company to take no risk on someone to get you in than it is to, you know, for them to pay you 20, 18 to 20 grand, whatever it might be. That's still a risk. And it comes with a lot of administrative headaches, which a lot of companies just can't be bothered for anymore, because those headaches get worse and worse with each government, it seems. So I would say, yeah, work within that in this country. You have to just hustle it into the, hustle your way into the door. Build an audience yourself. Try as hard as you can to build an audience, because an audience will be leveraged. You've got socials. You've got the ability to write newsletters. You've got LinkedIn. You've got the options. Show up each day and make content. Like, that's probably the biggest thing as well. Like, really get into a flow of writing. Writing is fundamental. Learn how to write. Learn how to create. And just start making content about the things you're interested and passionate about. Find a way to kind of hustle your way into a door that can give you an opportunity. Just to start with whoever it is, just say you'll work for free or work on commission, whatever, and just start. Like, you just have to find a way in, and finding a way in and getting paid in is, I think, more difficult than ever, right? Hire more competitive pool, much more conservative business climate because of all the repercussions for businesses at the moment. So just get your way in, however you can, to something. And you'll learn more from just being there than you will. And see it as an investment of time. Obviously, not everyone has the luxury of being able to support themselves, or, you know, still be at home, as I was, right? I was at home. I was still like at uni age, and I was staying at home anyway. Not everyone has that. Most people don't. Of course, they have responsibilities. So then it's like, is there a way that you can fund that investment of time through other things, through another job, whatever it is? Just be creative around that. That's the way you're going to get it. I just think that's the, if you haven't started, that's the best way in. And also, shatter the idea that university added any value to your CV. It didn't. It's only slowed you down. Like, that's the majority of people that I know, I've seen, and the majority of degrees out there, they're completely useless to this world of media. Like, the thing you need in media is, you know, experience, either yourself or through another, actually doing the things that go into, you know, content, storytelling, broadcasting, whatever. You just got to do it yourself or find someone to teach you how. And that's never going to be done through university. So yeah, your 2-1 from Bristol studying American studies is not going to help you get a job in this industry. And that's fine. Be honest with yourself that it's not. And then don't get angry when you don't because of it, right? As a lot of people I know come out of university, get to the other side, I'm like, well, why am I not getting a job? And it's like, well, because it's totally unrelated and doesn't provide any tangible experience or value, which you can take into a real job, which is where you're going to learn everything. So yeah, it's like soapbox for me there, but I do think it's a bit important for people to have that honesty around that side of things.
Jordan, thanks so much for sharing all those insights, and congratulations on all that you've achieved, particularly more recently with Arcade Media and the Sidemen. We're all really excited to keep watching the journey and see how that brand develops over the course of time. But thank you very much for joining us on the podcast, and thank you for your insights. They've been fantastic.
Hey, thank you. No, thank you so much. Here anytime. Appreciate it.
To listen to more episodes and find out how to get happy in your working life, head to workall.co. Work happier.